Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On today's program, we have Catherine Cox. Catherine is Inupiaq. She was born in Anchorage, grew up in Nome, but now she resides in Colorado. Catherine has been sober for 6 years. And on this episode, Catherine courageously shares her story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome to the program, Catherine Cox. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Some of my family members have the flu, so we're battling that, of course. And, you know, just trying to get by day to day. How about yourself?
Oh, man, I just got over. I think it was the flu, and it took about 5 days for me to finally start feeling okay. I'm still a little bit stuffy, but it definitely ran through my house as well here in Colorado.
Catherine, can you go ahead and let everybody know who you are?
Yeah, for sure. My name is Catherine Cox, and I was born in Anchorage, but my parents were school teachers in Nome, Alaska. So, you know, 3 days after we were born, we flew back to Nome, and that's where I grew up until I was about 12 or 13. My parents, they were teachers in Buckland, and they ended in Nome, and they taught the rest of their time there, and then they retired when I was about 13. But each year, I have, like I said earlier, I have a twin brother, and I'm 8 minutes older, just so everybody knows. We used to get sent to Fairbanks from like the age of six until we actually moved there. Every summer we would go there and play baseball because there wasn't a baseball league in Nome. So every summer up until we actually moved to Fairbanks, we went there and played our sports. And then we actually finished high school, and I graduated college at the university there in Fairbanks. And then I spent the last 12 years in Anchorage, Alaska, before moving to Colorado Springs.
Wow. And are you Indigenous?
Yes, I'm 50% Inupiaq Eskimo.
Okay, Inupiaq's in the house.
Yep.
Well, that's cool. Nome, I'm from Bethel, so we were kind of rivals, Nome Nanooks and Bethel Warriors.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Wow. And I guess congratulations are in order?
Sure.
Congratulations on, getting married.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we got married on November 3rd, so we're pretty much brand new at it.
Yeah, I just saw you posting some pretty awesome pictures, some beautiful pictures. So, yeah, that was so cool. Catherine, are you able to let people know what things looked like before you got sober?
Yeah, for sure. Well, my sober date is November 16th. So I just had a sober birthday as well, and I'm going on 6 years, or I'm past 6 years now, actually. Sorry. But before that, I didn't think I had an issue, but it definitely caught up with me. Once I graduated college, I moved to Anchorage and got a job right away in the Human Resources Department of NANA Management Services. And that's where my journey started as, in human resources. And I did 10 years of that, all while, like, I was slowly developing, you know, an issue with drinking. And, you know, it was the weekends, and then it was, every day, and then it was all day. And, you know, eventually I just couldn't put the bottle down, and I kind of recognized that, hey, I can't even function without drinking, and this is a huge problem for me. So where I was working, when I finally, you know, admitted to myself that I had an issue, I was at a place called Crowley, and I worked in HR there. And luckily, my HR director, she was a big help with me. I was late for work, or I missed work, I don't necessarily remember. But the next day, I talked to her. I was like, I'm having an issue with drinking. And so she actually found a rehab center in Washington for me, and that's where I went. And that's kind of where my sobriety building blocks have started.
Gotcha. So, well, first of all, congratulations on 6 years. Oh my gosh.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. When you were just starting to get sober, how did you navigate through the decision that, you know, oh, I need some help? Was it people telling you, or did you just realize yourself that, you know, I don't want to live this lifestyle anymore?
I don't think it was necessarily people, but I was secluding myself. You know, I wasn't really visiting my family, and I'm tremendously close to my parents and my twin brother. And I noticed that I was, you know, I would just go right home from work and pick up the bottle and just, you know, stick to myself. And that happened, or that, it was like that for a while. And then I noticed I was just getting really sick. Like, my body, my gallbladder was not working right, so I was in the ER a lot, and I kind of recognized that I had an issue.
Yeah. Isolation is a big thing. And, you know, I did that too. I would want to, because nobody wanted me to drink, right? So I would be like, okay, I'm going to, you know, get a bottle or whatever, and then isolate and drink by myself. And that way I can enjoy the feeling of alcohol. And then once I started getting drunk, then I would start to like drunk text and drunk call people. Yeah. You know, you need that, like, it's like you want to go have fun now, you know. But before, it was like, oh, it was almost like a shame, you know, like you wanted to do it but nobody wanted you to do it, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely tricky. I feel like the devil kind of tricks you into being like, it's okay. You know, nobody could tell that you're drinking, but, you know, just keep doing it.
Yeah. And yeah, that sickness that you said, man, it's like an illness. You know, when you're having hangovers afterwards, you know, when you're young, it's like, ah, it's okay, I can go to work or whatnot. And then for me, it's getting older and just doing it over and over. It turned into like illness, you know. It was just like days and days of sickness. And, I don't ever want to go back to that, you know. And multiple trips to the ER, you know. And I was so ashamed when I went there, even though I was like shaking so badly and just like so ill, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, at the Native Hospital there, I've had both experiences where there was, you know, kind of you were looked down upon, like, oh, you'll get over that. Just get some fluids in you, whatever. And then I've had other experiences at a different time where there's a nurse that was just so kind and non-judgmental, you know, and just wanted to help, you know.
Yep.
And at that time,
definitely remember those.
Oh yeah. At that time, that's all I needed, was just like, oh, you know, no judgment. I was just so sick. And of course, afterwards, I was telling myself, I'll never do it again, you know, never do it again.
Yeah, definitely.
Can you let everybody know what was the process for you to, you know, start to get help?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I talked a little bit about my boss at the time helping me get into rehab, and that was kind of the building blocks of me getting sober. But I went and I successfully you know, did the rehab program. I learned, and that was just basically the beginning of me understanding this disease and how my brain works around, you know, alcohol. So of course I came home and, you know, did go to AA meetings for a little bit and thought, you know, I didn't have to do much. And then that led to a relapse. So I relapsed for just a short amount of time, thankfully. And it was kind of like an awakening. Like, one of my last drunks was, of course, by this time I was living with my parents because I was trying to get back on my feet. And so the only place that I could drink, which is horrible sounding, is my car or my truck. So I would be in the parking lot, you know, taking a few shots or whatever they are. And one night I drank too much and went inside my parents' house and I blacked out. And apparently I was, you know, walking around, stumbling, trying to walk on the wall, like trying to climb the wall. And that was just a huge wake-up call for me, because my parents and my niece saw me like that. And somehow I got out of the blackout and started to remember and started to, like, notice what I was doing. And that was so frustrating for me, because I was like, this is not me, and this is not a good thing, because I could end up dying. So the next day I marched right over to dry dock at 5 o'clock and saw one of my friends that ended up being the best sponsor that I could ever have. She saved my life, basically. And I went in there and I started doing the steps, and I showed up every day. I challenged myself to fix what was deep rooted in me. I didn't know at the time, but doing the steps actually took all of that trauma and all of that grief and made it go away and made it lighter for me. So the steps and the promises are 100% amazing, and they worked for me.
Man, AA is so awesome. And AA, no matter what type of path you have in your sobriety or your recovery, AA is a foundation for a lot of people, you know, me included. Because mm-hmm. when I came out of treatment, I was all AA, you know, and, you know, I found this path here doing this, and mm-hmm. and this is kind of what is holding me accountable, you know, in my sobriety. I get to listen to different people's, everybody's stories is different,
yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. but AA seems like everybody that you talk to, that's like one of the biggest foundations of somebody's sobriety recovery, AA or NA.
Yeah, definitely. It is definitely a good tool to have. It's not for everybody, but, you know, you definitely have to figure it out, and sometimes figure it out fast, because it's life or death. You know, if you keep drinking, it's like Russian roulette, basically. But yeah, I had a firm foundation in AA, and then I created more of, for me, I wanted to live my sobriety out loud on social media, because I know how it feels to suffer alone and not know what to do. So I've constantly for the past 6 years have posted inspiration and, hey, this is what I've done. Like, you know, it's been a big accountability for me as well online.
And that's how I found you. I was like, oh, social media is, you know, people say, oh, you're taking too much, you're spending too much time on that social media on your phone or whatever. And I'm saying, hey, man, I'm doing my homework.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's how I found you, is one of your posts. You say you call yourself a sober influencer. You tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I definitely, I just felt the need to, hey, I did this and I feel amazing. And I know that people out there and a lot of my friends and family, they struggle with this. So I just started posting little daily inspirations or huge milestones or just, I don't know, the words just flow out of me when I post about my sobriety, because it's a huge part of me, because if I don't have my sobriety, I don't have me. So,
yeah, I think when you said recover out loud, I think that's something that I believe in so hugely, because, you know, if you're trying to inspire somebody else or even send hope out to other people, you have to recover out loud, you know, just to show people that they're not alone.
Yeah, definitely. And it has helped me in a, you know, just not just posting, but people send me messages probably at least every week. And they're like, hey, man, I'm struggling with this. Like, I don't know if I have an issue. And, you know, we end up talking and, you know, we get a little inspiration out of just messaging each other and figuring out what their next steps are, you know. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I have that too. And if I don't have like an answer or I don't know something, then the recovery community, the sobriety recovery community is so amazing. I could refer to somebody else who may know the answer or may be able to help better.
Yeah, definitely.
So what is driving your recovery now? Or how do you like live day to day? What are your hobbies? What do you do?
Those are good questions. Well, we moved here to Colorado 2 years ago, and it was very interesting because it was right in the middle of COVID. So we kind of have done online. We've done day trading, and we, as me and my wife, we've done day trading. We've done physical fitness online. We just kind of created different ways to generate income because we weren't really looking to go to work during COVID. So. And then for me, I have 5 years of private security experience, and that's what I was doing up in Alaska. I was actually a transport officer for several years, and I transported mental patients all across the state. So I just gained a lot of experience in the security world. And, before I became sober, I had this huge goal in mind to become a police officer. I love to help people. I'm a natural protector. I protect my family. I train in the tactical world, like with carbine and handguns, and that's just my huge passion. And now that I'm in sobriety and able to work on myself, I actually applied to become a police officer here about 11 months ago. For the Colorado Springs Police Department. And I went through the whole process, and it was about 11 months long, and I passed everything with, you know, it seems like God's work, because it was so easy for me. And now on Monday, I'm going to the police academy here. And that's my next big step here is, my dream job is about to start on Monday. So
wow, and that is so needed. Indigenous people in law enforcement, not only law enforcement, everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, we need some representation in every field.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I was talking to I think it was Yahi from the Twin Flames band, and he was a police officer before. Uh-huh. And I asked him that question about, you know, has he ever seen any, you know, people who may, you know, are racially profiled or I forget how I put it, you know, the racism came up, you know, and he said, unfortunately, he has. And my experiences with law enforcement and, you know, just the legal system, of course, it's been experiences with law enforcement has been only when I was, you know, drinking or drunk, you know, and a lot of the times in my eyes, I've experienced some racism to some point, you know, maybe they look down to at, you know, Native people who are drunk on the street differently than somebody else. Or, but, you know, that's just what I saw. And just, because of that experience, that really, like, I had a view of law enforcement. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, definitely. Luckily, I have not had to deal with too many interactions when I was drinking. I probably was drunk, like, in public. Like, I've never, like, peed in public. That's kind of, that'd be embarrassing. but I've never had to deal with cops, like, in that way. But I definitely have seen it. Right before we left, I was actually a patrol officer for a private company, and we'd patrol the gas stations, because for some reason in Anchorage, a lot of people like to loiter at the gas stations and drink in the parking lot or do drugs or whatever. So I'd get called to those a lot, and I don't think I really experienced any kind of racism. I always, you know, have treated people with respect until they crossed a line.
Right. And I have to remind myself too of what they were having to deal with, which was me drunk, you know?
Yeah.
So even though I had those glasses on of me experiencing that, and then my mind thinking, oh man, they're just racist. You know, I got to remind myself
the
other side, you know, and that's hard to do for me.
maybe go do a ride along with APD and just see, you know, you could go in there and just do a ride along and see what they see on a day to day basis now that you're sober.
That's a good idea. You know, that is such a good idea, because the only thing I experienced is the side of me when I was drinking, you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
So I'm so glad that you're going into that. So, props to you, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah. It's, for what I've experienced so far, everybody's very supportive, and they're excited for me to come aboard. And, you know, I'm part of the LGBTQ, so I want to, you know, break down some barriers there between the cops and and the community and the LGBTQ. So I think that's a huge opportunity. And then plus I'm Native, and, you know, I could just educate people on Alaska Natives
as
well.
Wow, yeah, man, that's so cool, man. Mm-hmm. So inspiring. Yeah. That is awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, so you got a lot of representation in all, you know, all the hard areas.
Yeah, definitely. I asked my dad the other day, I said, is it hard to have a daughter like me? I just do everything the hard way, you know? And he was like, I think you're doing everything exactly how you need to be doing it. You are not a hard daughter to have. So,
man, yeah, no kidding. I have a question about your treatment. So you said you went to Washington. Was that a traditional, like, cultural, or is it kind of like a straightforward mainstream, I guess you could call it?
I think it's a mainstream place. It's called Lakeside Milam, and several different people were in there for drugs and alcohol. But it wasn't a Native driven recovery center. It was for all.
Okay.
People.
Okay. Did they have peer support there? Like peer support specialists that have been through what maybe you or me have been through?
Yeah, I believe so. It's been so long that I went through that. But I do remember people that worked in there have actually gone through the program before, so I think
Okay.
so.
Yeah. I was a guest speaker for a class for a UAF at the Cusco campus. And that was one of the questions for me was like, what changed? Because I've been through treatment a couple of times, residential treatment a couple of times, and then outpatient treatment like a bunch of times. But one of the biggest things that I could that came up to me was the peer support specialists, you know, the people that have been through it. I've had experience where I went to treatment and then it was like, okay, we do these packets or these workbooks, you know, and we learn from them, but there wasn't somebody who has been through it and lived the experience that maybe you or somebody else in there has. And that made a huge impact in me because I felt like I was with somebody that I could actually talk to that would understand, you know. And now I understand CITC has a cultural peer support specialist, which is really huge, you know, because in indigenous culture, once you're drinking or drugging, it seems like, you know, the cultural, the traditions and everything go on the, fall on the wayside because you're basically thinking about one thing and that's either alcohol or drugs, you know. And the cultural aspect being reintroduced into people's lives is huge, you know. I had this question in some of my episodes. It's the alcohol question. Does alcohol bring out the real you, or does alcohol make you into someone you are not?
It's been so long since I've been drunk, so I don't really remember, but I feel like I didn't really change. Like, I didn't get drunk and become violent. I didn't get drunk and then just shut down. I just became very mellow. But then it also changed me in a way because I became dependent on it. So after always needing it, I kind of just became a person that was not really
So kind
myself,
of both.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Is there anything else you want to share before we end this?
Just keep going. Like, if you're struggling, don't be afraid to reach out to any of us that are sober. I'm pretty sure we'd get you in the right direction. There's always help out there, and you have to sometimes take your day 1 minute at a time, not just one day at a time.
Yeah, awesome. Catherine, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
Man, I
you.
wish you the best in your endeavors and everything like that.
Yeah, thank you so much for having this, for all the people to listen. It's amazing. I definitely have listened for the last few years, so it's awesome to be on here.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person who is walking with us on this healing journey. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.